It almost made up for the 25 grand he'd conned out of me. We set off on our bicycles back toward the center of town. With Carolyn and the girls, I took taxis, which could mean anything from an automobile to a cart pulled by some thin, sweating guy on a bicycle. It pissed me off that the four of us couldn't ride bikes together like any other Chinese family. "Since when are we a Chinese family, Sam?" was my wife's reply. But the girls pleaded terror of falling off the bikes and getting crushed by the thick, clattering columns of riders, all ringing their tinny, useless bells. Secretly, I believed that what really turned my daughters off were the crummy black bikes the Chinese rode. Such a far cry from the shiny 5 and 10 speeds Melissa and Kylie had been reared on. In our previous encounter, his name had been Cameron Pierce. Now, as we rode, he introduced himself as Stuart Peel, shouting over the thunderous racket of passing trucks. The names fit him exactly, both times. Cameron had had the impatient, visionary air of a guy who thinks he can make you a shitload of money. Stuart was soft-spoken, a sharp observer, what you'd expect from a reporter. I told him my name, Sam Lafferty, half hoping he'd make the connection. But only when I named the company I traded for did I notice him pause for a second. "I've taken a leave while they investigate me," I said, to my own astonishment.
"Investigate you for what?"
"Messing with the numbers." And unnerved though I was by what I'd revealed, I felt a mad urge to continue. "It's just internal at this point."
"Wow," he said, giving me an odd look. "Good luck."
We dismounted in front of a large concrete kiosk, teeming with several lines of people, all shoving and elbowing one another good-naturedly toward a ticket counter in a manner I'd decided was uniquely Chinese. Stuart spoke to a uniformed official in vehement but, I sensed, broken Chinese, gesturing at me. At last, the official led us grudgingly through a side door and down a dimly lit corridor that had the smudged, institutional feel of the public schools I'd attended as a kid, and made sure my daughters would never go near.
"Where is it you're headed? Chengdu?" he called.
We had entered a shabby office, where a military-looking woman sat behind a desk, seeming thoroughly disgruntled at Stuart's intrusion.
"Yes, for 4 people, I reminded him.
Within minutes, I'd handed Stuart a wad of cash and he'd given me the tickets. We re-emerged into the tepid, dusty sunlight.
"You leave tomorrow," he said. 8:30 a.m. "They'd only sell me first class. Hope that's okay."
"It's fine." We always rode first class. So had Stuart, I guessed, in his prior incarnation.
"Thank you," I said. "Jesus."
He waved it away.
"They don't want Americans having a lousy time over here," he said. "You point out that it's happening, they'll fix it."
He handed me his card, the address in English and Chinese, the China Times logo neatly embossed. Still a pro, I thought.
"You live in Xi'an," I remarked. "We may go there, check out that clay army."
"Look me up,"
he said, clearly not meaning it.
"Thanks again."
"Forget it," he said, then mounted his bicycle and rode away. "A total stranger?" my wife said, back in our hotel room, where I'd surprised her with the train tickets. "He just did this for no reason?"
"He was American."
I was dying to tell her he was the cocksucker who'd conned me, but how could I explain having hung out with the guy, having accepted a favor from him? I knew how Carolyn would see it. One more incident in the string of odd things I'd been doing since the investigation began, the most recent of which was to beg my family to drop everything and come with me to China. It wasn't depression, exactly. More a weird, restless pressure that made me wander the house late at night, opening the best bottles of wine in our cellar, and drinking them alone while I channel surfed along the forgotten byways of cable TV.
"Where are the girls?"
I said. "I got them each a little knife to peel pears with."